This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode each week, available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Stitcher. My name is Aaron Peterson, and I'll be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers to give you insight into both what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. John Jarrett is an actor who's been around for decades. The Australian talent got a big break about a decade ago when he was cast in the intense horror film Wolf Creek as sadistic madman Mick. This part took John's career in numerous directions, including launching a Wolf Creek franchise, as well as working with established directors such as Baz Luhrmann and Quentin Tarantino. Well, now John has decided to make his own mark behind the camera with Stalker, and it's Stalker. Just to clarify, it's a viciously dark black comedy about a stalker named Jack, who's played by John, who's following Nurse Emily, played by Karen Fairfax. Now, when Jack decides to make his midnight predator move, Emily knocks him out, and then Jack wakes up in a chair. The rest of the film veers wildly back and forth as we come to find out both of our lead characters are sadistic in their own right, and they have a two-person battle of the sexes as secrets unfold and things get even more twisted. John dropped by The Hollywood Outsider. I mean, not literally. Australia is pretty far away. But he came out to talk about his directorial debut with Stalker. We discussed the film in detail, as well as his friendship with Mel Gibson and the future of the Wolf Creek franchise. Stalker is now available on video on demand. I definitely recommend it. But without further ado, here's my interview with Stalker director and star, John Jarrett. How are you doing, sir?
I'm pretty good, mate. Yourself?
I'm doing good.
That's the way.
First off, I just want to say I've got a couple friends from Australia, and I told them I was going to be talking to you, and they wanted to say that they were indebted to you for finally destroying the myth that all Aussies are Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah, I'm the anti-Dundee.
You're the anti-Dundee. I'm sure you've gotten a lot of that over the years.
Yeah. Yeah, Aaron Peterson, the famous Australian actor called Aaron Peterson. Do you know that?
No. Really?
I thought it was him. I thought, what's he doing ringing me?
I mean, yes, that's me. I'm a famous, you can tell by my accent, I'm a famous Australian actor.
Yeah, he's an Aboriginal actor.
Is he really?
Yeah, Google him when you finish.
Oh, I'm going to do it. I might do it right now. I don't know. I'm kind of excited. Well, the first thing I ask anybody who I interview is, what motivated you? I know you've been doing this for a long time, but what motivated you to take on the life of an actor? Was there a moment in your life when it struck you, or what made you say, that's what I got to do?
I was struck a headmaster of a school that I was at in central Queensland, which is like the outback of Australia. Mm-hmm. And I was involved in a concert at the school, and I stole the show, apparently. And the headmaster said, look, I didn't think you were good for anything, but you should consider becoming an actor. You've got a talent for it. And I'd never thought of it before that. And so that was the germ of the idea was then when he made that comment.
Did you even see that in yourself before, or you didn't see it at all?
No.
Really?
Well, in a one-horse town in the middle of Queensland, the last thing you're thinking of is, you know, with no TV reception, and you see John Wayne films on the weekend at the outdoor cinema. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of acting going around.
So you have like the same expectations for yourself that a lot of people would have, and you finally somebody spoke up and saw something else, and that really sparked an interest in you.
I was one of those. I didn't have a clue what I was going to do. I was one of those guys who didn't know. I was just bopping along in high school.
So how do you pursue that? I'm kind of curious. How do you pursue that when you're in a town where that's not something that's
Well, then I went to a place called Townsville, mm-hmm. which is a city, which is the biggest place I'd ever been in my life when I got there. And a friend of mine I played football with did amateur theater, and he was going to go to this place called NIDA, which is the major film school in Australia. And I asked him what that was, and he told me, and I said, well, I'll audition too, because this guy said I should be an actor. And so I kind of – that was another bit of serendipity. So I went and auditioned with this guy, and I got in. And the rest, as they say, is history.
It sure is. It definitely is. You have had an extensive and very notable career as an actor. What made you decide you wanted to direct?
because I was also the producer, and we had a low budget film involved, and I was going through the budget, and I said, "We're going to pay the director how much?" I said, "I'll direct it." That was it. It was a financial decision.
Oh, so it wasn't a deep-seated desire to be a director.
I never had a burning desire to be a director, but having finally directed something, I now want to direct. So I didn't particularly have any grand ambition to be a director until then. And having done it, I kind of like it.
I think you did really well, sincerely. There's a lot of really strong shots that you imposed in here, as well as the soundtrack that you chose was phenomenal.
Thank you. Yeah, we're very proud of it.
Can I ask you, what was it about a script centered around two hormonal psychotics tangled up in a kind of a war of the sexes that really appealed to you and said, this is the movie I have to make?
Well, it didn't actually work out that way. I said to my two other people involved in the film company at the time, mm-hmm. I said, because it's hard times we're going through, you know, because of illegal downloads and people stealing billions of dollars from our industry and getting away with it. And so it's not easy to make anything, especially in Australia. You know, we've got the population of LA in a country the same size as yours. So mm-hmm. it's not easy to make a dollar, you know. So I said, we need to make a film with two actors. Hopefully I'm one of them, because that was also financially expedient, mm-hmm. Set in one place, and, you know, along the lines of Streetcar Named Desire or Virginia Woolf or War of the Roses, you know, something that can be contained. And I said, I don't care if it's man or woman, two men, I don't care, just as long as it's meaty, creative, and we can find a way of making it relate to cinema. That was the plan, and one of our members, Chris, happened to be writing one, and that was Stalker.
It's a really interesting concept that you have a character that is stalking someone, planning on doing vile, disgusting things to them, and they just happen to be doing it to the person that also happens to be a vile, disgusting, despicable person. So you have two of the same. I mean, it's really hard. You have two unlikable characters. It's very hard to orchestrate a scenario where the audience will root for characters that are both relatively unlikable. And I think you guys managed to do that.
I don't think they're unlikable. I think they're just likable people who become severely flawed.
Well,
you know, I've met plenty of couples who were probably started out fairly nice people, and they end up in a marriage not as crazy as the one in Stalker, but there's pretty crazy crap going on in some people's marriage. And, you know, I've got especially in my parents' generation, you know, what the hell they were doing together, I do not know. You know, it's just outrageous and violent and crazy, and the world's full of it. You know, every day you read somebody's belted the crap out of somebody, you know, or gassed their children, you know. Compared to that, Stalker's nothing. So I don't know how crazy it is, really.
This is how you see modern relationships, then. That's really what I'm getting out of this.
Oh, I see a lot of modern relationships are like that. I mean, I just in Australia, this entire family was gassed last week.
You're kidding
me. Two kids and the wife and the husband. He killed them all and then killed himself. So that makes Stalker look pretty tame to me. And you got to, I mean, you must know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, I get what you're saying. I meant the actions that they were taking would make them, in a typical Hollywood film, make them a villain to a degree.
I don't particularly think that they are villains. I disagree with you. I think that people, there's a dark side to everybody, and it's just a massive dysfunction. But they actually get off on the dysfunction and they've turned it into a game, you know. And I don't particularly think they're bad people. I think they're just highly dysfunctional. And that can come from bad upbringings, which I think the female character has. and the male character's been strung along and captured like a, you know, she's like a spider who's captured him. That's how I look at it. And I do think that it, why it relates to a lot of people, and not many people watch it who don't like it, is that it is exaggerated, but a lot of people relate to a lot of that. I mean, my friend Mel Gibson went through that shit, and he's not a maniac. He's the nicest guy you've ever met. It's just that he had the worst day of his life recorded and put on the internet, you know. But everyone who knows him knows he's not like that. But he had a day of that, and we all heard it, you know. And believe me, he is the, one of the nicest human beings you could possibly meet, the most generous, caring person you could ever come across. But it doesn't matter. We all have these moments, you know.
Great way to frame it. And I am a big fan of Mel Gibson, so I get exactly what you're saying. He seems like everything I've ever seen of the guy. He's, outside of a couple incidents, great guy, seems like.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, tell me if this has ever happened to you. You got pissed, you got pulled up, and you did, and you said and did some dumb things. I know I did because I was a drunk.
Yeah, I did. Every day. Every day I think I do that.
And then I was at a Supernova, which is like a Comic Con, right? And they're pretty queued up, these film nerds that turn up there. And one of them has a Q&A for Wolf Creek, and one guy put his hand up and says, "You know Mel Gibson, don't you?" I said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "He's an asshole, isn't he?" And then I said, "Okay, put your hands up if you've ever had an argument with your partner." And just about everyone put their hands up. I said, "Keep your hands up if you had a really full-on argument with your partner, called them, swore at them in the most foul language and said the most disgusting things to them, and maybe even thrown shit, you know?" And I think about nearly half of them kept their hands up. And I said, "Yeah, keep your hands up if it was recorded and put on the internet." And they all put their hands down. And I said, "No, he's not an asshole."
Yeah, I remember when you go through like custody battles, you can relate, you can understand to a degree. So you know,
absolutely. I've been through three of them.
Yeah, they always end that way. I hate to say it, but very rarely is it like, "Hey, handshake," and everybody leaves.
Okay. We were just not getting on, so we just had a divorce party and it was lovely, and off we went.
Speaking of, you and Karen have a lot of like vulgar and vile barbs at each other, which is great. And you're sparring throughout the movie. I'm kind of curious, what was the hardest? Was there one that was really hard to get out where you thought, "Okay, I'm having a hard time even saying that"?
No.
All right. That's what I wanted to hear.
No, not at all.
That's great. That's great.
No, the writing was really good. I could hardly wait to say the dialogue.
Some of it, because I will tell you, in our very PC culture over here.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you know how that is. It's very rare that you see filmmakers that are willing to say some things that you guys say in this movie.
You can say motherfucker, but you can't say cunt.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You can talk about fucking your mother, but you can't talk about vaginas.
You know exactly how this works. You've been to America. All right.
I have. I can speak American. You want me to speak American?
Yeah, give it a shot.
"I'm good. You're good. We're all good. Dude." And what's up?
And that's the saddest truth I've heard in a long time. Yeah. That's everybody I know. Yeah. Okay. Well, you're tied up in a chair for the majority of the movie, and I'm sure you get asked this question in every single interview, and I apologize, but it's intriguing to me. How cumbersome is it to direct when you're tied up with a gag in your mouth?
It was very challenging. It's probably for a debut. Directorial debut was probably not the easiest because I was in every scene and I talked a hell of a lot, and it was difficult. Karen was very helpful because she's been in the business, I've known her since she was 18, and she's a very good actor, and she's done a lot of theatre directing. So she got a co-directing credit, and that was because she had to be pretty helpful to me. You know, when it was my turn, if you like. So it wasn't easy. And I also surround myself with amazing experienced film crew, and I had a really good first AD. And I had even my makeup artist, who's, she's 67, I'm not afraid to listen to them. You know, sometimes my first AD would say to me, no, do another one, do another take, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a good film is a collaborative affair, and everyone helps each other. But no, it was tremendous. I really enjoyed it. It was hard work and tough to do out of a chair, tied up at times. But all in all, it was a grand experience.
And speaking of the directing, you've worked with a lot of acclaimed filmmakers, including my personal favorite, Tarantino. Did you learn anything from all the various directors that you specifically pulled? Anything unique or specific that you pulled for this movie?
I probably got more out of Peter Weir and people like that because I was 22 when I did Picnic at Hanging Rock. Mm-hmm. But with some great directors in Australia, Bruce Beresford, there's a lot of really good directors here and have done a lot of work in your town. Mm-hmm. So as a young guy, I learned a lot, especially Peter Weir. He was a huge learning curve for me. And I ended up with one of the great directors, and we all knew he was going to be that. And then, believe it or not, some people are just naturally talented. Mm-hmm. And Greg McLean is one of those. He's probably he's up there with Peter Weir as far as I'm concerned. So by the time I got to work with Tarantino, I admired his ability to as a filmmaker and watching him on set and all of those things. But as far as performance is concerned and the direction for me on the day, I wasn't given anything outrageously amazing from that other than what I'd experienced before. But he does have a very strong overview, which I think makes a great director. And he always knows exactly what he wants, and he's aware of every nuance that's happening. That was impressive. But as for one-on-one, basically there was a lot of actors, like Jamie Foxx and all those guys, mm-hmm. who are very experienced actors. So he just gets out of your way and lets you do your thing, really, and may suggest, you know, something to do or something not to do. From that point of view, you know, there wasn't any aha moments, but watching him work is I can understand why he's so good, you know.
So I know I got to let you go here in a second, but what's next for you? Are you planning on directing again? I know I saw a rumor that there's a Wolf Creek 3 coming. I know that the TV show's on, but planning on directing too?
We're in talks about the second series of Wolf Creek. I'm doing a five-part documentary series on the Australian film industry called Wake in Film, because one of our first films was Wake in Fright. Mm-hmm. 1971, and so we're doing that. And I've got a film called Who Cares Sal, which is about a Down syndrome guy and his empowerment, and he plays the lead. We look like getting that happening, and I'll direct that and be involved as an actor in it, not in a major role, but that's Jared O'Dwyer, who's the Down syndrome actor, will play the lead. So that's coming up.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting. Wonderful actor. He won a prop fest in 2009. He's about 30, Jared. Okay. And he's at prop fest is a big festival, probably the biggest short film festival in the world, actually. And Nicole Kidman gives the prize money, and this Jared won best actor, and that year. Not best Down syndrome actor, best actor. And he says, I got $3,000 from Nicole Kidman. Very proud of that.
That's great. It's even better that you're actually hiring someone that has the medical condition to play that character. That I know that doesn't happen very often, so that's great.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Can you explain this to me? I guess I don't understand. So Wolf Creek, it was two movies. And then it went to the series, and now it might be not a third movie, but a second series. Is that what you meant?
Probably a second series, and then the third movie, and that'll probably be it. I don't think there'll be much left.
That really turned into a big, a huge, huge get for you. That's great.
Yeah, it has been. Yeah, and hopefully will continue to be for a couple of years. And yeah, it's great to be part of an iconic thing like that.
Well, I know I got to let you go. Great work with you and Karen. You guys did a great job, and the movie is really fun. And even though it's a really dark black comedy, it's really fun. So I really enjoyed it.
Good on you, mate. Thanks so much, Aaron. And look up Aaron Peterson.
I will. My doppelganger, the big movie star. Yeah.
Yeah, he's in a film called Goldstone that's just been released. He plays the lead in it.
Maybe I can pretend to be him and get into the premiere or something.
Oh, well, you're not black and you can't do the accent.
Okay. Touche.
Right, mate.
All right.
We can do yours.
I'm not that good an actor.
American actors can't do our accent either.
No, I can't. I did it and it sounded like I was from Kentucky. So
there you go. See y'all later.
All right. Exactly. All right. Well, take care, John. It was great talking to you.
You too, man.
All right.
Bye.
There you go, guys. That was my interview with John Jarrett. Remember, Stalker is on video on demand right now. If you like dark comedies, if you like black comedies, I think you are really going to enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed John's honesty and his willingness to converse about a lot of different topics in the interview, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did, and definitely check out his new movie. I look forward to what he does next. Remember to subscribe and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you currently use. Our normal show has a new episode each week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. I hope you guys enjoyed this interview. We try to bring you these whenever we can with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema, and I really hope you enjoyed this one. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater or sit comfortably on your couch and watch Stalker, buy popcorn.